Welcome to Season 7 of the Follow MLE Podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome to Season 7, Episode 4. I am grateful you are here because the story you are about to hear will make an impact on your life without question. I've said a few times on the show, when you host a podcast, you really keep a short list of people that you really want to have on the show because they've made a big impact on you personally. And today is one of those days for me. John O'Leary joins us. And I know he wouldn't like me bragging about him because he's one of the most humble men I've ever met. But this guy is an absolute beast. He's an unbelievable example to model. And for those of you unfamiliar with him, at age 9, John burned 100% of his body and was given a 1% chance to live. He's gone on to inspire thousands of people. And he authored the book On Fire, The 7 Choices to Live a Radically Inspired Life, which was a number one bestseller. He's also an accomplished speaker and podcast host of the Live Inspired podcast. And all of that is amazing. But John considers his greatest success to be his marriage to his wife, Beth, their 4 children, and his relationships with his family and his friends. In this show, John urges us to create and live by our own personal mission statement, which answers the question, why do you choose to thrive? Think about that. Why do you choose to thrive? John answers the question in the show, and he says, God demands it, my family deserves it, and the world is starved for it. I promise the time you spend listening to John and his story today will help you be inspired to live a better and more fulfilled life in service of other people. So without further ado, here's my interesting conversation with the one and only John O'Leary. Just a quick housekeeping item. I did want to acknowledge our brand new book, F.M.L, Standing Out and Being a Leader, that just came out this week on Amazon and Kindle Book. We've had some amazing feedback from our audience about the book, and we so appreciate you taking the time to read it and learn from it. And tell your friends. So you can find the book on Amazon just by searching F.M.L, or you can link to it directly from our website at learnloft.com. Well, John O'Leary, thanks for being on the show.
John, it's a pleasure, man.
You know, we share a name, which I think is fantastic. I want to start with the simple question. Where did your name come from?
My name came from my mom and dad's lips primarily. They've always loved the name John. They were going to either name me John or Christian. I'm one of 6 kids, the second boy and the 4th born. But they went with John, and I had an old great-grandfather who had the name John. And also biblically, John is someone who mattered deeply to both my mom and my dad and now to me. So I think it comes both from great-granddaddy and also my mom and dad's faith.
It's awesome. I am a John 3:16, March 16th birthday. I did have a grandfather, John, as well, but for God so loved the world, he gave his only son. So I think my mom was a little inspired by that as well. but your story at this point has been told a lot of times, but I'm not sure everybody knows who John O'Leary is. I think it's just one of the most fascinating and impactful stories that I've ever come across in terms of inspiration. For people that don't know John O'Leary and your story, can you give the summary of what happened to you as a child and what you're doing today?
Yeah, sure. And how about I begin with today? I'm married. I live up in St. Louis, Missouri. Married to my wife of 13 years, almost 14. We met in college and have been in love since. We have 4 kids, 11, 9, 7, and 5. I'm a business owner. I'm a son. I love to swim. I love to ski. I love life. And I guess the story you're really asking about took place 3 decades ago. I was a 9-year-old little boy. I had seen some kids in my neighborhood playing with fire and gasoline. And what these little guys would do is they would sprinkle gasoline on a sidewalk, strike a match, stand back 2 feet, throw the match on top, and the gasoline would dance to life. And I assumed, looking up at these big, tough, practically men, they're 6th graders, these big old guys, if they can do it, so can I. So can I. So on a Saturday in January 1987, as a 9-year-old, I went into the garage. Mom and dad were gone, came over to a can of gasoline, 5 gallons, bent down next to it. And the plan, John, was to pour a tiny bit of gasoline on top, you know, before the liquid even came out, the fumes, right? I mean, that's the flammable stuff. We could riff on this. I know the leader's paying attention to you right now. We could spend a lot of time on this one. But in life, like in gasoline, it's very seldom the liquid that will burn us. It's not the things, in other words, that we're talking about in the boardroom or the bedroom or in our worship services or on the media channel that actually end up burning us. It's the stuff we refuse to talk about because we're too busy or because it's too scary. And that day for me, and I think most days for us, it's the fumes. And the fumes came out, created a massive explosion, picked me up, launched me 20 feet against the far side of the garage, set my world literally on fire. And I was trapped in the garage, eventually to come out. But I found myself later on that morning in the emergency department with burns on 100% of my body. 87% were third degree. Man, it's a death sentence. And that's really the beginning of this incredible journey forward.
It took me back. And then when I maybe part of the story that might not get covered as much or never has is what your siblings did. And I want you to touch on what actions, because I think so much leadership is about action, and what right. actions your brother and your sister went into almost immediately to save you.
Right. And it's a beautiful question. And candidly, man, it's one seldom asked, because if people don't really do the legwork ahead of time and really read through that book, they're not going to be able to even probe. So I appreciate you doing your homework and checking out On Fire. But that morning, you know, I'm nine. I'm scared. I ran on fire through the flames back into my mom and dad's house. I stood on top of their front hall rug, just screaming, begging, praying for a hero. Mom and dad are gone. The fire department's not going to make it for a while. I need anybody. I need a leader in today's vernacular, but I need somebody to do something for me, because I'm not ready to do it for myself. And I hear the footsteps coming up from the basement. Eventually, I see my 17-year-old brother, Jim, racing toward me. And as a child, you know, this is my older brother, I remember seeing him thinking, oh my gosh, anybody else, right? Not this dude, man. I need someone of some substance, someone of some character, someone who's put out fires before. And I think we could all, you know, imagine what I'm talking about here. Not our older sibling. And yet, leaders and friends, this was his day to change and to shine. He picked up a rug. He ran back over to me. The little rug was the kind you're supposed to wipe your feet on. Beat me with that rug repeatedly until he knocked down those flames, carried me outside, jumped on top of me, rolled around, saves my life, runs back into a burning house, calls 911, and then makes sure the dog and his sisters are all out. 1987, the lifesaver of the year for the state of Missouri. And some of your followers on the coast may be laughing, won't you? Just Missouri. Well, 5 million people, man. And the lifesaver of the year was no firefighter or National Guardsman, but a 17-year-old high school junior who woke up in more ways than one, who changed, became a better version of himself, and in doing so, saved my life.
It's amazing. And think of the impact that his actions, that one day, now has made on the world. By what you've done and how many lives you've touched, it's almost will bring you to tears, man.
I mean, you know, when I think about it, it does. And you know, we're dancing around the superficial level of the story, because there's just so much here. What I love about my story, John, is very little of it has to do with me. Mm-hmm. I'm like the center of it, but it's really about the planet spinning around it. So I'm in some regards, I'm the sun. But we don't look at the sun. It's too shiny or too hot. It's about the planets and the stars and the things sparkling all around. And that's the exciting aspect of my story. And I think if we all look back on our own stories, man, the achievements we celebrate at the end of our days has probably very little to do with how many marathons we ran, typically, or how many peaks we climbed, if it's only for us. It's when we run the marathon or climb the mountain or do the right thing in our own backyard or at work or in the community or at the bedside for someone bigger than ourselves. And it's a collection of those stories that really makes our life a beautiful mosaic to check out and to be in awe of. And what I get to do is tell this story where I'm one of the main characters, but I'm not the hero, man. In some regards, I'm the villain. I'm the fool. I'm the one always tripping myself forward. And then a teacher shows up. A parent shows up. A brother shows up, a business owner shows up, the doctor comes in, the janitor comes by the bedside, my friends show up, this girl shows up, and the kids show up. And it's just the story of men and women showing up, doing the next best thing. And in their actions and through their life, we see how we all can live a little bit differently.
Beautifully said, John. One of my favorite parts of the entire story we haven't touched on, and that is Jack Buck. I find what that man did for you in an action-oriented way as good of an example of leadership as maybe I've ever heard. For those of unfamiliar with Jack and what he did, can you share a little bit about Jack and how all that went down?
Yeah, and I appreciate you raising it. It's for me, and I have the honor of traveling the world, meeting phenomenal leaders. I'm a speaker. I've been in all 50 states and all over the world. I've never heard of a story as profound as it shows up in leadership as the one that we get to talk about together. And again, I'm not the star, so I'm happy to share it. Jack Buck, for those of you who have never heard that name, you may have heard his son's name. His son is Joe Buck. Joe calls every Super Bowl. I believe he's called the last 19 World Series. So Joe's a celebrity and a big name in and of his own right. He's a great leader and a great guy as well.
But to stop you, Joe is one of my favorite announcers. And I often tell people, I would listen to Joe Buck snore. That's how much I like him. I mean, he's fantastic.
And he may let you. I mean, he's kind of a weird dude. So he may let you come bedside and just kind of tune in for a little
bit. His ability to say things just at the right time are just uncanny.
Well, he is a friend and a guy I respect. And he takes a lot of heat in social media in particular. The reason for that, I think, everyone thinks Joe hates their team. In truth, Joe calls a game right down the middle, and when someone scores a touchdown, he celebrates. When someone makes a great play, he celebrates. And if that happens to happen against your team, you're mad. Yeah. And you think Joe Buck's rooting against you. Yeah. So the poor guy calls every big team and every big game, and everybody ends up hating him because he's rooting against their team, they think,
part-time. They think he's a little Cardinal biased. And you know what? He probably is.
He may be a little bit, but I love him. I respect him, and I think he's got a booming, beautiful voice. He also has a booming, incredible father. And so Jack Buck was his dad, and Jack Buck was my hero. He's a radio announcer for the St. Louis Cardinals from the early 60s through 2002. So for four decades, he's amazing. He's royalty in town, and for the first 9 years of my life, he's everything, man. I listen to him every night of my life. I got burned on a Saturday morning in January 17th, and the following afternoon, I'm laying in the hospital bed dying. I'm tied down, arms and legs tied down. My lungs have been burned, so I can't breathe, can't eat or drink, can't communicate with my voice. I'm completely silent, and my eyes are swollen shut, so I can't see. A little boy burnt on his entire body, unable to do anything, literally, other than feel and be sad and go into his thoughts and that inner darkness occasionally, but occasionally come back out of it with a little bit of faith and hope and love, and you dream and pray and you hope, you imagine, you set crazy goals for yourself. And I could also hear, you know, and I remember hearing doctors and nurses coming and going, my mom and dad coming and going. But on January 18th, I heard the door open up, footsteps walk in, a chair came across the floor. I heard someone cough. And then I hear this voice, you know, not on the radio, but in my bedroom, and it's the voice of Jack Buck. And the voice says to me, "Kid, wake up. Wake up. You are going to live. You're going to survive. Keep fighting. John O'Leary Day at the ballpark will make it all worthwhile. Kid, are you listening?" And I vaguely remember nodding, and then this gentleman says, "Good. Keep fighting. Keep fighting." And then this old crotchety man, this broadcaster, gets out of that room, walks down the hall, leaves me tied down in darkness and freaking lit up for life. I mean, that one visit, maybe more than anything else, launched me, ignited me forward toward possibility, changed my life. And I learned later on, John, when he left, he put his head against the glass wall, started crying. One of the nurses came over, explained to Jack that the little boy was going to die, that there is no reason for hope. It's 100% burn. There's no chance. So this news now shows up in this stranger's life. And we're not friends. I never met the guy. It shows up in his life. He takes it home. He cries, he prays. And by the way, the diagnosis will come into all of our lives and businesses. There is no chance. Mm-hmm. You hear it as a country right now. We hear it as an economy. Many of us are hearing it in marriages or relationships or health diagnosis or finances. No chance. Well, when that shows up, what we do next matters. You talked about action a lot, I know, in your podcast. What he does is he takes it home, he cries, he prays, he reflects, and he asks a single action-focused question. And the question was, what more can I do? What more can I do? It's ownership. It's ensuring tomorrow's better than today. What more can I do? The following day, a 9-year-old little boy is hanging on for dear life in a burn center in St. Louis. And then his door opens up. Footsteps, a chair, a cough. And then a Hall of Fame voice comes back into my life and brings light over the darkness. And the voice says, kid, wake up. You are going to live. You're going to survive. Keep fighting. John O'Leary Day at the ballpark will make it all worthwhile. And those visits continued, and I won't bore you with repeating the same language day after day, but they continued for the 5 months that I was in hospital. Changed my life.
He kept visiting.
He kept coming back. It's in leadership these days, and for those of you in sales or parenting or your sons or daughters or maybe you volunteer, we hope that it's more like a drive-by. I'm going to volunteer. Maybe I'll even do it Thanksgiving morning, and I'll feel freaking great about myself. I did my task, and then following November 23rd, I'll do it again. What Jack knew, I think he learned it during the Battle of the Bulge when he picked up two Purple Hearts, is it's not a one-off. It's not a drive-by. It's more like erosion. It wears slow. It's painful. It takes going back again and again and again. But, man, it wears true. And this guy came into my life over 5 months and then really over the following couple decades that followed.
Why do you think Jack Buck came into your life?
It's a question in some regard you'd have to ask him, and he's no longer with us. I did ask his son Joe that one time, why was your dad so good to me? And his answer was, it was the way your eyes looked every time he walked in the room. And I get emotional even saying that because I never get asked that. Why did he do the things he did? Well, maybe it's the way you look back at him when he walked into your room. And at first, with eyes swollen shut, the way that looked. But then eventually he walked in and my eyes one day were open. Maybe I wasn't able to talk yet, but there was reflection of light and joy and hope. And that little light from a 9-year-old tied down to a hospital bed kept motivating this guy to keep serving and loving and showing up during the 5 months and then over the next 2 decades or so that followed.
Is it why you do what you do today, John?
It's not specifically why I do what I do today, but it is why when I get asked to do almost anything, and I got to be careful on your podcast because we get crazy requests, but honestly, I try to say yes to all of them. And it's getting harder and harder to do physically, but what we do organizationally is if someone says, hey, John, there's a little boy burn in our community or a family going through this or a couple going through that, we try our very best to either be with them physically, to send them encouragement in the note electronically or through the old-fashioned mail system.
Right.
We try to send them stuff, books, DVDs, CDs. I try to send them personal videos through technology. We try to love people, man, because first of all, love and leadership are in many regards the same word. I believe it's our calling as leaders. And secondly, I've been well loved, man. I'm not here because I'm that good. I'm not that good. Trust me. Get to know me a little bit better and you'll see it. Jack Buck and Mom and Dad and Brother Jim and countless others have shown up, have done things that I'm sure were awkward and painful for them. And yet in doing so, I'm on a podcast today with you, and I have 4 babies I get to love, and I'm married to this gorgeous gal, and I get to travel the world sharing this story because other people were there first.
Yeah. Well, it's just powerful stuff. I mean, when you really think about it, so many things that we allow to infiltrate our life in a negative manner, whether that be fear or whether that be concern or whether it be you name it. And what you've been through to have the perspective that you're just a cog in the wheel of telling the story of, even though you're at the center of it, it's a lesson that is phenomenal, John. It really is. The perspective that you have is tremendous. I'm going to ask you a question that I've been thinking about. My wife and I don't watch a ton of television together. We just have different styles, and we try to watch a little TV as we can. But we started watching this show called The Wall. And I'm not sure if you're familiar. It's on NBC, and it's two people. They're usually a married couple or maybe sisters-in-law or brothers or sisters. And they try to make money by answering questions, and this ball drops down the wall. I think it's produced by LeBron James. Mm-hmm. And it's really a unique kind of a gambling kind of game. Mm-hmm. And we watch the show pretty regularly together. And one night I said, why don't we just submit an application to be on it together? So my wife pulls out her phone and she submits this really long submission, and a couple weeks go by, we hear nothing. And I asked her about it. I said, why don't you think we heard back? And she said, I don't think we have a unique enough a story. Mm. And it got me thinking, John O'Leary has one of the most unique stories I've ever heard. There's probably a lot of people out there that feel, I don't have a unique enough a story. What's your response?
Right. It's my first response is great question. And the second is, it's a lie. I mean, it's a freaking huge, massive bunch of crud. And I wish we weren't on a podcast. If we were having a beer or coffee, I'd go deeper and use the other how massive the lie is. But our stories and our lives are profoundly important. Maybe we think it's from a false sense of humility that we don't embrace that. But what I know at this point, John, is that everybody has a story. And it's just not the story they're telling the world. And in order for us to come forward, to raise our hands, to shine effectively, we got to vulnerably, fully embrace the beauty, the majesty, the value, and the worthiness of our own stories.
Do you hear that question much? I mean, do you hear that you have this unique story, and that's why you wrote a book, and that's why you do public speaking, and that's why you inspire people? Do you think everybody has a story to tell?
So I would say not everybody has a story where they should grab a microphone and do a TED Talk or do a 265-page novel on their high school experience. So I don't think that's what we should all be doing with our stories. What I do know, what I absolutely am convinced of, is yes, everyone has a story. And everyone's story profoundly matters to the stories of everyone else. We are connected. We live in an undivided world, man, and our stories matter. The stories not only of our leadership and influence, but the stories of our past. They, you know, those like little wooden Russian dolls, the ones where you pull them apart and there's another one. You pull them apart and there's another one. You pull them apart and there's another one. All of those stories have formed us from our childhood through high school, through college and beyond, into the men and women that we are today. And none of them are unimportant. Every one of them is valuable, and every one of them provides lessons that we can learn from. If you cut down a tree, if something should happen in your backyard and a tree falls, by looking at the rings, not only can you tell how old it is, but also you can tell the seasons that tree endured and survived in. The drought, the wet times, the good times, the bad times. The stories of our life matter.
It's beautiful. And one of my favorite quotes, I mean, you've got a lot of them, and as I've listened to you and learned from you over the years, I have none, that's probably not even correct English. I have none more favorite than, you can't always choose the path you walk in life, but you can always choose the manner in which we walk it. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
I mean, in some regards, it means everything. And I said that one time in a presentation, those words you just quoted back to me, and a lady recorded and came back later on and asked me if she could post it. And I said, post what?
And it just kind of... Didn't even know I said it.
No, man. It was a question someone asked about, how do you deal with adversity? And I said, you know, you can't always choose the path you walk in life, but you can always choose the manner in which you walk it. And they moved on from there. And so they asked me for a specific adversity I deal with today, because it's very hard to relate to a child going through burn care. I mean, geez, it's a pretty crazy story. Hopefully none of us will ever go through that. So let me be more specific. This morning, how about this one, John? This morning I was shaving, okay? And for those of you listening right now at home or on your way to work, I don't have fingers, right? They were all amputated when I was 9. I can do everything today, but it's just a little trickier. So I don't have fingers. I'm in the shower. My razor falls. And so I got to pick it up. Not a big deal. It's wet and slippery in there. So I pick it up. I start shaving again, it falls again, and this time I'm a little ruffled, so I bend down, pick it up, and then almost immediately it falls a third time. And now I got to decide, do I freak out and try to punch through the glass or curse what happened to me as a child and the misery that it's brought me and my doggone wife, I bet she hears this, I'm waking her up, she's going to be mad at me. All the things, that negativity, that the flow of negativity and victimhood, why me? Or do you bend down, dude? Let the hot water wash over you one more time, pick the thing up, go back to your work and get it done. I choose, and I'm no angel. I make mistakes. I get hot like everybody else. But you have this opportunity in between the thing happening and how you react to choose life, to really choose how do I respond to this. And fully owning that, whether it's at work, in a relationship, when someone says something rude to you or they cut you off on the road and then they give you that one-finger salute, they don't own you, man, and that razor doesn't own you, and the traffic doesn't own you, and TSA officer is strip searching you. They don't own you. You get to decide how we respond in every single occurrence. So, it's a quote I shared. I love it, but I'm still trying to practice it myself. I'm a student, not a teacher.
It's a journey, man. It's a journey, and just because you figure something out today doesn't mean you're going to have it figured out tomorrow, and so the persistence is key, and as I really got deep into the book and into your talk, even that quote about choosing, and then as I got through the seven choices in the book on fire, which one of the seven do you really hold closest to your heart? And then maybe which one, if you could choose one to teach your kids and them to just own it, what would it be?
That's a great question. So first, to know, like the way I write, and by the way, what I do better than some people is I'm a great thief. I just steal like crazy, man. So anything you're hearing on the show or anything you read from me, none of it's mine. And I'm not pompous enough to pretend like it is. I mean, there's words written 2,700 years ago, and the words are, there's nothing new under the sun. And then it goes on from there. We love to act like we have new issues. No one else has ever struggled at home with their doggone spouse. Are you sure about that? Because it seems like in scripture and Greek literature and in Asian culture, it's as old as the sun. There is nothing new under the sun. So one thing I do, I think, pretty effectively is borrow from people that have come before me and then share in a way that unpacks this in a way that people can now pick it up and run forward in their own life. I think one of your mottos, even in this podcast, is teaching today's leaders to interviewing today's leaders to inspire tomorrow's leaders. Well, that's what I do. And one lesson I heard from an author is what they do is when they write to a specific individual, even if it doesn't say Dear John. But they try to write letters, newsletters, books, chapters, whatever, to a specific individual. So I wrote every single chapter of my book specifically to a family member. Including my four babies. So all four babies have a chapter specifically for them. They don't even know it. But when I sat down to write one, I had Jack in mind. And when I sat down to write another one, I had Patrick and then Henry and Grace and my wife and my mom and dad and then a couple other dear family members. So that's one thing that has helped me shape On Fire, to write it specifically for individuals that I knew might benefit. The original question was, well, what's your favorite? And that's a little like asking which one's your favorite child, but I'll answer it anyway. You know, it's Grace. Man, how can I not love my baby girl?
I got
girl?
One little girl, too. I think she's my favorite, but I don't tell John Ellis that, okay?
Yeah, I mean, you delete that afterwards, of course, and I won't get in trouble with my home life. But the most important chapter is chapter one, and it's not a sexy title. It's a title around accountability, but the actual working title is Do You Want to Die? And I loved the idea of starting a book all about life on a chapter titled, Do You Want to Die? And now, hopefully your audience is saying, well, why would you do that? And it's because it's the question I heard from my mom the day I was burned. She came into my room in the emergency department, walked over to me. She told me she loved me. And it's after my dad visited, and there's just a whole lot of emotion already going on. So I look up at my mom, and I'm laying there burnt on my entire body. And I say, Mom, knock it off with the love. Am I going to die? Am I going to die? And this incredible leader looks back at me, takes my hand in hers, looks me in the eyes, and says, Baby, do you want to die? Your choice, honey, not mine. Which, if you view it through the wrong lens, is the rudest, most negative, crass, horrible response you could ever give to a dying child. Do you want to die? And yet, if you see it, I think, through the lens of leadership and love and possibility and a little bit of hope and faithfulness, it's one of the boldest, most courageous responses ever. ever, at least in my life.
It's amazing.
Do you want to die? That's bold. And I said back to her, Mom, I don't want to die. Jeez, I want to live. And her response was, good. Then look at me. Baby, you take the hand of God, you walk the journey with him, and you fight like you've never, ever fought before. Your dad and I will be with you every step along the way. But listen, you got to own it now. You got to fight. And so the lesson is January 17th, I'm in the ED. I'm scared. I'm burnt. I'm naked. It's not looking good. But we made a commitment on day one to fight on, having no clue there would be a skin graft on day seven, or amputations on month two, or a trach until month four, or I'd go back to school 14 months later. All we knew is, dude, today, and by the way, all we have is today, leaders, the fight's on, man. The fight is on. And so it's a beautiful lesson my mom taught me. It's a great question she asked me. It's how we begin our book, On Fire, Do You Want to Die? And I think that's my favorite trait from the entire book.
Well, my favorite question to ask actually happens before the episode, and most people don't know this. Much like your favorite part of the book, I asked someone that knows you really well, what kind of person is John O'Leary? And this is what I got in response. John is a funny man. That's what took me by surprise.
Well, I wrote this, so I keep going. I like where it's going. I think the next sentence is, he's also very handsome and yeah. Built like a brick.
Yeah, no, I know that's what you wanted her to say, but she actually said, on a more serious note, he is a family man first, and he's always present no matter where he is and who he is with. How does that make you feel to know someone that works with you and is very close with you thinks of you that way?
I mean, I'm humbled by all of it. Like, everything that's come my way, it just blows my mind. He said funny means a great deal. To hear anyone outside of me, because I do feel this way, but to have it echoed by others is meaningful. He's a family guy first. So he's done some stuff in his life, and yet what compels him forward is his family. He's a dad. He's a husband. He's a son. I got to hang out with mom and dad this morning. I'm a whole lot of things before speaker, podcaster, right? All that stuff, man. That stuff's passing. But I'm a dad, and I'm
well. It's true, and you're a great example of both father and husband and leader. Let's end on some fun stuff. You just brought up your family there and your kids. What's harder, leading at home or leading at work?
Yeah, so the answer to your either or is yes and. And I think frequently what we try to do, and I think it's the mistake most leaders make, is to be a leader at home and then to go hat that I might be wearing. And so which one's harder or easier? It's all the same in some regards. It's an undivided life. And so I try to be supremely present with the people that I'm with when I'm with them. And I try to give the best of that time to the ones at home because I think they've earned it.
What's the best investment you've ever made?
A diamond ring that I bought my wife 14 and a half years ago. I don't know what I paid for it, but I know what it bought me. And it's worth more than whatever the investment was at the time. So that's for me, and I've never been asked that question, but that was a great investment.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question I've never asked, and I don't know if anyone's ever asked you. You ask a question on your show about someone running back into a burning house, and what would they grab? So I want to flip the script on you for a second. Your house lights on fire today. All your family's mm-hmm. safe. All of them are safe. And you get a chance to run back in that house and grab one thing. What's the one thing you're going to grab?
Yeah, so, of course, all the family's out and all the babies and dogs are out. And, you know, it's easy to grab things like photo albums or tax receipts, cell phone, laptop, all that stuff. But I say let that burn. What I would probably grab, the man you brought up earlier, Jack Buck, you said it's one of the greatest leadership stories of all time. And we shared one chapter out of eight that we could have talked about. But one of the final chapters is that when I graduated college, this gentleman shows up with Parkinson's disease, just riddling his body, and stage 4 lung cancer. And yet leaders, what I hope you heard loud and clear is he shows up. Like, there he is. He's present. He came one final time, and he brings a package and a note. The note read, kid, this means a lot to me. I hope it means a lot to you too. Enjoy, it's yours. And when I opened up the package, I looked inside, and it was the crystal baseball that Jack had received when he went into the Hall of Fame. It's you know, the highest mark that a leader in baseball could possibly be presented with is that Hall of Fame chest, their bronze statue in Cooperstown. But what they go home with is a little crystal ball. Jack Buck gets his baseball, holds on to it for about 20 years, should give it to Joe, his son, should give it to Carol, his wife, should give it to one of the other seven kids. And instead, he gives it to a 22-year-old college-drunk kid that has no clue what to do next in his life, no clue how to put his right foot in front of his left, no clue the value of his own story, the significance of his own life. And yet, in giving me that little crystal baseball, he taught me again to believe in myself and to see the beauty in the scars and the profound nature of the story itself. So that baseball, John, I hid it for about 11 years after he gave it to me. But now if you come through my house, it's on a shelf in the living room reflecting light, and it's not up there to show people how great I am. It's to remind everybody who comes into our house what real generosity looks like, what real leadership looks like, what real love and life looks like. And it's an invitation to do likewise.
Well, I it's the fact that you get to tell that story to other people and inspire them, and that's what you would grab. I was always curious what you would grab. I know you asked that question to others, and so
right.
Does not surprise me at all, John, that you have a well thought out and inspiring answer. Where can people find you? Where can people find the show? I know you're in your second season. Let's make sure. I'd love to point people in the right direction.
Yeah, so I am John O'Leary, so you can always search that, John O'Leary. The full domain is johnolearyinspires.com, so no apostrophe, but johnolearyinspires.com. We have a podcast that launched 19 episodes ago, and it's hit in the top 20 of iTunes. My secret sauce is bringing people who are remarkable, who just have extraordinary stories. Guys like Dave Ramsey and folks, Brené Brown and Joe Buck did an episode with us. Just talk about life, man, life. Mistakes made, lessons learned, how we can do life better afterwards. So it's a great podcast about great individuals, but ultimately about listeners. And that's available at Live Inspired. So it's the Live Inspired podcast. And then, of course, I'm following online, but maybe the way people can really learn a whole lot about this story is to check out our book. The book is called On Fire. It came out last March. It became a number one national bestseller. It's being translated into 17 languages. And the reason I can brag is it has nothing to do with the author. Simon & Schuster, the publishing house, wanted to put a big old picture of me on the front of it. And if you check out On Fire, you will not find a picture of John on the front or the back. If you look through the pages near the end, you may see a couple pictures of our family and time in the hospital and Jack Buck. But it's a story about others. It's a story about community. It's a story about leadership. And it's a story about being accountable to becoming the best version of yourself.
Well, I respect your humbleness and the vulnerability you shared today. I know with 100% certainty that not only are our listeners smarter today because you came on, but I know you had a big part of that story. And I know you have a big part of telling that story and having the confidence and the wherewithal to turn to God and others to tell it and continue to tell it to inspire others. So I wish you would give yourself more credit. I know you're not going to, John, but we so appreciate the time you gave us today and continue to inspire others, and thank you for your work.
Well, man, I appreciate your work, John. I'm grateful that you had me on. And I'd just like to say this. Every business has a mission statement. And I encourage your followers, your leaders, your friends to write their own. And the mission statement points me not only toward that humility, it's not false, it's real, but also to strive to do better work going forward. So for me, my mission for life, the reason I choose to thrive and show up and be extraordinarily present in any situation is because. So it helps you answer the question, why do you choose to thrive? My answer is because God demands it, my family deserves it, and the world is starved for it. It turns me on, man. So it gets me out of bed early, keeps me up late, puts a smile on my face, and a little more of a step in my dance moves in the hallways through life. But I just encourage your followers, man, write your own mission statement, write your own ignition statement, see how that thing drives you forward, and then turn off the news and be reminded that the best is yet to come. Let's go get it together.
Thank you, John. Fantastic stuff. hope you enjoyed another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. It's a great pleasure and honor to bring you stories and best practices to help you on your leadership journey. As always, it would mean a great deal to us if you would share this with your social networks or with your friends. The best way that you can help us is to spread our word and help us reach more people, which is our ultimate goal with this show. As always, you can follow me on social media at John G. Eads. You can give us feedback on the show, ways for we can improve. And if you'd leave a rating and review wherever you listen to the podcast, it would mean a great deal to us. We get a chance to look at every single one of them. Until next time, hope you're a great leader at home and at work.